Agenda that they're gonna serve. I don't know who's in charge of it or what it is, if it's like a headless monster.
You know, I was pretty happy with that one at Gerbil's the other night.
Oh, yeah.
That was a good pizza.
Yeah.
Fat wallets and empty hearts.
It's insane how little musicians get. So, if you're interested in supporting not just me, but any musician that you like, one of the best ways to do that, it sounds old school because it is purchase their music. purchase their merch, you know. Hey guys, this is Mark from Rat Rod.
Hi, this is Mikey P from Skell.
Hey, this is Jeff from the Bell Jumpers.
Probably
be Paul, because he's awesome. This is Jessica for the band Dimitis. You're listening to Pennsylvania Rock Show.
Not how I planned.
everything to just feel better. Tell me what to do.
Well, that was interesting. The intro video decided not to play, so we're just going to go with it. This is the Pennsylvania Rock Show, episode number 715. With me tonight, we will get to in just a moment. You just heard three tracks. They were Royal Honey, The Tease, then Eat It on Fire, Love Bomb, and then the third track was Buck Johnson, Just Feel Better. And speaking of Buck Johnson, that is my guest tonight. What's up, Buck?
What's up, Bill? How's it going, man?
Not too bad. That was the first time that's ever happened.
Okay. I've done a lot of shows, and that's the first time. It's special, then.
we'll call it rare.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, like a Topps rare card that's misprinted or something.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so before we get too far into this, I told you off the air I was going to ask you to mention some of your credentials, and they are far and wide and lots of names that people are going to know. So why don't we start there?
All right. Well, I am the keyboardist and backing vocalist for Aerosmith and the Hollywood Vampires, and also for the Joe Perry Project. I've worked as an artist myself with record deals with in rock and in country. I've played with artists such as John Waite, Backing vocalist for the Doobie Brothers on a live album. Gosh, you know, Matthew Sweet, I toured with. Tal Bachman did his album, which had a number one called She's So High. That was with Bob Rock producing, you know, known for Metallica and many other great artists. You know, I've just been fortunate over the years, just worked hard, moved from Alabama to California to LA in the early 90s, and just, you know, said yes to as many things I could do that I felt like I do, even things I didn't know if I could do. It scared me, but I still did it and surprised myself. And through relationships, like in any business, you know, you hopefully, you know, make good allies and good friends, and you move forward, and more opportunities present themselves.
Sorry, I had to mute myself. My wife buzzed into the room.
Well, that happens, you know.
It's live. All kinds of things
happen. I love live TV. It's great. You know, you don't probably, hopefully you won't hear my two chihuahuas barking downstairs. My wife.
I actually plan on asking you about them because the Laverne and Shirley thing.
Yes, right. Of course. Yeah.
So I'm like, clearly, I'm guessing that Lenny was first.
No, it wasn't Lenny first. We had, these are both rescue chihuahuas. And about 6 years ago, we rescued one from the same East Tennessee small dog rescue. Brad Whitford from Aerosmith rescued one, and we rescued one. And ours was called, his name is Cowboy, and he's about this big. He's all of like 4 pounds. And he's got a flopped ear, and you know, we fell in love with him, and he was a good dog, and we had another dog at the time, so we had two, and then the other dog passed away a couple of years ago, and so we had Cowboy, and we thought, well, chihuahuas like to be alone, one number one dog, so, but we had friends who, a friend who's a guitar player, Tony Higby, shout out to Tony, plays with Tom Kiefer, and he also plays with me with Brother Kane, with Damon Johnson. He and his girlfriend do an amazing job rescuing animals. And they found this chihuahua named Lenny. And he was found by the side of the road, of course, and just abandoned. And so we fell in love with him and took him in. He has an overbite. And so him next to Cowboy, who's black and smaller, it's like, oh, it's Lenny and Squiggy, you know, from Laverne and Shirley, because, you know, Lenny's got the overbite and Cowboy's the loud, boisterous one, you know, the dark hair. So we just thought that was pretty funny.
Does Cowboy answer to Squiggy?
He will, but, you know, Cowboy was his name, you know, and that we call him that. But we also call him Lenny and Squiggy, you know, sometimes.
Cool. The other thing that I saw on that list that I wanted to ask you about was your chicken piccata from scratch.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Not many people ask me these questions. So, Bill, this is kind of fun. You know, when I first moved to LA in the early 90s, you know, while I'm saying yes to any gig I could take, I'm also having to work a day job too. And I did that for many years. You know, I was waiting tables and working in great restaurants. And, you know, you pick up a thing or two. And I like chicken piccata, and I like, all right, show me what you do, you know. And I just, over the years, have really developed it myself, you know, to its own thing. And I don't know, it's okay, I guess. My wife loves it, and so special occasions, I'll whip it out.
See,
the chicken piccata, that is.
Right. I knew what you meant. So that segues perfectly into one of my questions that one of the other DJs told me not to ask you, which means I have to ask you.
Okay. Uh-oh.
So I have two main questions that I always ask on the show. And this one is, I want to know what the best pizza you've had because you're a musician. So you have to link it to like a tour or a recording session or at a gig or something along those lines.
Well, I'm not good at remembering names of restaurants, but I've toured a lot of places around the world. But hey, you can't beat a New York pie. I'm sorry. It's just you know, no offense to Chicago or anybody else. We've got a couple places around here in Nashville that do a pretty good job, but, you know, New York Pie is where it's at. And I know there's, you know, the one that everyone talks about or two that is the one to get, but someone will remind me when I'm going there and I'm like, oh yeah, I'll make sure I stop, swing by and grab a slice.
I went to Chicago years ago to watch the Penguins play the Bruins outdoors.
And oh yeah, that's cool.
What I remember about that trip mostly was one, it was the coldest I've ever been in my life.
Okay.
Two, I went to now I'm gonna blank on his name. Legends. What? It's his restaurant. He's a blues guitarist, famous. He's won Grammys. I can't think of his name now.
Well, you're stumping me because Chicago.
Terrible.
I should know this too.
Buddy Guy. Yes, Buddy Guy's Legends. That was the highlight, and I couldn't remember the name. That was the highlight. We went there to eat lunch. There was a guy playing acoustic blues on the stage. It was awesome.
Well, let me say this. It's wherever you are is where it is great. Because, like, if you're there in Chicago and you're having the authentic Chicago pie in a restaurant and it's fresh, then you can't really beat that, too. As opposed to Nashville's version or store-bought version, which is going to be never as good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we had our Chicago-style pizza after the game in the hotel when we were trying to thaw out. So it was good and it was hot.
Did the Penguins win?
No, the Bruins crushed us.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But all right. So I have another question for you in this segment, and then we'll take a break and listen to another song. And I may as well ask you the other question. It's going to be probably a little weird because I feel like you probably have played with them already. So the question is, who's your Dave Grohl? And what I mean by that is, who do you want to be like in the crowd and have them bring you up on stage to play with them? Because, you know, the Foo Fighters do that all the time.
You know, when if I was in the crowd and an artist brought me on stage, maybe Paul McCartney. Oh. That would be, I mean, I wouldn't know what to do. I'm like, I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy. I mean, I've been lucky. I've worked with some legends, you know, Steven Tyler, Alice Cooper, just to, you know, start there. I mean, and I would be feeling the same way if I hadn't worked with them already, you know, so I have a little different perspective. But, you know, I mean, I've never met Paul McCartney, and I saw his concert, and, you know, it was emotional. You know, it's history. And if you were invited on that stage, you know, oh my gosh, pretty special.
It's funny that you picked him because he and Dave are pretty close friends.
I imagine so. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So what we're going to do, we're going to take a short break and we're going to listen to Half Will's song, Good Day. We're going to come back and we're going to talk a little bit about your song. And I'm going to ask a couple more of my not normal questions.
You got it.
So your song, Just Feel Better. I noticed that the title, unless I'm misremembering, is it the same song you did with Santana or just the same?
Oh yeah. No, it's the same song. I mean, I wrote the song with my good friends, Damon Johnson and Jamie Houston, almost 20 years ago. And a few years after that, we found out that, well, mainly because Jamie Houston had the connection to Clive Davis and was able to have Clive Davis hear it. And I'm saying the demo, and they were, Clive was actually, you know, it's just kind of like anything. And, you know, it's like you do enough, we write enough songs, you record enough, you pitch so many, and eventually you hit. You know, and this one hit. It was right timing. Clive was looking for a song for Santana. He had already done a few albums with those duets, you know, and this was like the third one. And he was looking one for Santana and Steven to sing because, you know, Clive signed Santana and Aerosmith. And so to put two Hall of Fame famers, Rock Hall of Famers together, it was to be the event of the year for him and his label. Anyway, you know, we was just really blessed and fortunate that it was recorded by him. And then, you know, over the years, many friends and my wife would say, hey, you should put out your own version. You know, you had a great demo. And I'm like, all right, well, maybe. And, you know, one thing would always get in the way. I'm touring or I'm working on this other project or this other band. And well, the time finally came where when I was doing this record that I thought, OK, I'll record it and put my version out.
So one of the names you mentioned in there, I told you that I was going to have to ask you about because my daughter was reading over my shoulder. Jamie Houston has the link to High School Musical, and she actually stopped mid-sentence when she read it and then did the fangirl thing behind me. So I promised her I would ask you about High School Musical and what your link is to that.
You know, Jamie, as I mentioned, is a good friend of mine. I met him shortly after I moved to L.A. He's from Tennessee. I'm from Alabama. And so we had some mutual common things. We started writing together. Eventually, we put a band together. And, you know, it was one of those bands that was supposed to be the next big thing. And, you know, it never really happened. But we maintained this long work time friendship and working collaboration over the years. And at some point, you know, he was signed with Warner Chappell, the band. I was signed to Warner Chappell, and then he moved over to Disney and started working for them, you know, and he was a staff producer as well as a writer. And so they would put a project on his desk, like, okay, here's this thing next, High School Musical. And no one knew what it was going to be or how big it could be. And so he would hire me to, I needed a string orchestration for this ballad, you know, in the first one, or I need keyboards or piano on this one, you know. And so, you know, I was always a work for hire for Disney. So it was whether I was doing an elaborate string orchestration or when he was doing Hannah Montana and I just need some explosions at the top of the chorus, you know, which took me 10 minutes, it was still the same money, you know, regardless.
Right.
but hey, you know, you take the work and it's, again, it's those relationships. And he had really good success with that. You know, I'm happy for him. And, you know, it's interesting that you never think in a million years you'd be working on some show for Disney. And then the next day you're working with, you know, some heavy metal artist. It's just, you know, in this world, you kind of have to wear a lot of hats, and the more you can do and the more you're capable of doing, the better chance of success.
I'm going to really take a turn here, and I'm going to ask you one of my odd questions.
All right.
So you're leaving a gig and there is a DeLorean sitting there with its door open and a flux capacitor in the back seat.
Okay.
Where are you going in time, and what band are you going to hang out with while you're there?
Oh, that's a loaded question. I guess because only reason I mentioned Paul McCartney before, I guess I'd have to say 1963 when the Beatles hit, and they're on, you know, they're on in America for the first time, and just soak in what they're thinking and what they're feeling. And I mean, you know, I guess when I've been around artists I've worked with, whether it was, you know, Aerosmith or or with Johnny Depp with the Vampires, you get a little bit of that Beatlemania, you know, when you're, you know, in a new town or going into the hotel or whatever. So I can tell what that feels like. But the excitement musically, no, that's, they're doing something that hasn't been done before. You know, I mean, it's not, I mean, they had all their influences they pulled from, which were known, but no one had seen or heard this before. And I mean, I was there in LA and when Nirvana hit, you know, and I knew then it's all about to change, you know. And those are those moments in time and music where that has happened. And that was probably the biggest. The Beatles changed everything, you know.
Let's talk about some other artists, but you'll see what I mean. So for some reason, while you're on tour, which with whichever band, you hire me to drive the tour bus. What music am I going to play in between show stops while we're driving
from one gig to the next? That we're all listening to?
Yep.
Because it'd be only you listening. Because, you know, it's like my time off, usually I'm not listening to music unless it's something that, you know, after you play a show especially, you got to give your ears a rest, you know. And it just makes it seem more fresh when you're approaching the stage and you haven't been listening. I mean, I guess when you're in the dressing room warming up, that's when we listen to music, stuff that gets us fired up, you know, and it can be a range of surprising what artists would listen to. You'd be shocked in some cases. I know some heavy rock artists that listen to country music before they go on stage. It's whatever works for you, you know, but on the bus, I would say, man, whatever keeps you awake. You
know? that yeah. Seems like a valid answer.
Yeah, right. You know, hey, if you want to listen to some really thrashing metal and that keeps you awake and keeps you fired up, then by all means, go for it, brother.
See, in that situation, I would probably be introducing you guys to a lot of music you hadn't heard before.
Okay.
Because
yeah.
Because most of what I listen to and all of what I play on the show is unsigned. So,
yeah. I'm sure you get a lot of great music that none of us have heard. And I always say that. I think there's a lot of great, you know, we talk about the 60s and the 70s, all these landmark artists and you know, in the age of video in the 80s, where, you know, you go see these bands now, whether it's Aerosmith or Foreigner or the Doobie Brothers and, you know, the Eagles, you know, Kiss, you know, every song in the set's a hit song. Well, nowadays it's changed so much. There's so many great artists out there, but it's hard to know about them all. You know, I think there's some great music and great albums being, you know, made today that a lot of people don't know about. It's unfortunate, but that's just the way it is. So we need more people like you, Bill, to give these bands exposure.
Thank you. Speaking of more people like me, Jonna, who just commented in the chat room, owns First Angel Media, which is a company that runs out of Pittsburgh that does reviews for local bands and photography for, you know, both gig photography and, you know, the promo shots. And she does a ton of stuff. But her comment I wanted to read, it says, I tune in and within 5 minutes I hear about Santana, High School Musical, and then he was there in the midst of it all with Nirvana. Holy cow, what's it like being with the most interesting people in the world?
Wow. You know, I pinch myself. I can't believe I'm around some of these people, you know. I guess, you know, after a while when you're working with them, they just become Steven and Joe and Brad. And they're still my boss. I still know my place, you know, and stay in my lane and all those things. But, you know, it's pretty cool, man. I can't lie to you. You know, I get to be on a private jet with, you know, Joe Perry, Alice Cooper, and Johnny Depp, you know, and it's surreal. It's like it's a fantasy world. And I'm out on tour and, you know, and I'm with these guys and playing shows. And then I come home to Nashville and I'm cutting my own grass and nobody knows who I am. They just know me as I'm the neighbor Buck and my wife Kim, and we're pretty low profile, you know, keep it on the low, down low, you know, but I like it that way. I like coming home and peace and quiet, because it is crazy out there when we're out. It's you're moving, it's, you know, it's loud in ears, music being played, and you know, all the rehearsals and everything it leads up to it. And so when I come home, I have my studio here, and I just kind of a, you know, studio rat, I guess.
So I read, and I can't remember if it was in the bio or on the one sheet, but it said that you started performing when you were six.
Yeah. Well, I'm from Alabama, as I mentioned, and my family, I come from a musical family, and my mom plays piano, and my dad and my uncles, they're all singers. They had a Southern Gospel quartet and matching suits, the whole thing. And, you know, I can't remember a day growing up where mom didn't play every day, or there wasn't singing every day in the house. And, you know, mama says I was singing before I was walking. And that's because them, you know, and they're super talented. And I guess that kind of keeps you humble, because there's so many in my family who are so talented. They just never pursued it as a career. They just wasn't practical for them. You know, sometimes the cards don't play out for you. You know, you have kids and you have a decent job and that's what you do. And, but they still love getting together and sing and on the weekends. But, you know, as they were touring when I was a kid, they would, you know, drag me out on the road with them, and I loved it. You know, it was mostly weekends. You know, they would prop me up on stage and sing, and, you know, and I started singing with them. And then as I got into junior high, you know, my neighbors and, you know, I would ride to school with them, and they listened to the rock radio station that we didn't play in our house. See,
I think you're about to answer a question that I didn't ask yet.
Okay.
And that's, that question is, when did you know that this is what you wanted to do?
Well, I knew at a young age, because you get the attention, you know, and I knew I could sing. You know, like I said, I think if you get children at that formative years, those birth to five, it's like a building block, you know, and it doesn't mean you have to do music for a career. But what a great foundation, because we know what music can do to other faculties of the brain, for language, math, you know, math and music are like this. Right. So, I don't know. I was lucky that I had parents who instilled that in me and encouraged me. And I knew, hey, people are liking what I'm doing up here. And I could feel it, you know, like I know I could sing in tune, and I was bringing it, you know, and they're raising their hands and they're hooping and hollering. And I used to say, we'd go to these churches that were just short of snake handling. So they're speaking in tongues and everything. And it was an energy. It's the same kind of energy I think you feel at a rock concert. It's really the same thing. You know, it's this people together, they're feeling music, and it's powerful, man. And I just, it was in my blood and it never left. And of course it didn't hurt when you get to junior high and you put your own bands together, because you're hearing these songs on the radio and you want to do those songs. And then the girls are noticing you.
Yes.
Because I was a shy, reclusive boy, you know, and I'm like, okay, but I can get up on stage and sing. And we played all the, you know, the skating rinks and the pool parties, and, you know, and then that ends up and goes into high school. And then I'm in college and I'm playing all the frats and the bars and throughout the South. And, you know, and then get this crazy idea, hey, I can do this, you know. And but I had, I think to get those intentions, you have to have that foundation I mentioned of have been forming, and the encouragement. That goes a long way from family and from my wife, of course. And then from there, it's building relationships, you know. And you know, I think along the way, yeah, it keeps me grounded and true to who I am and what kind of music I want to make. You know, I've been in a lot of different kind of bands. Like I said, I was in a country band with a record deal. We had two top 40 singles. And that was with Damon Johnson, from who now plays with, you know, Lynyrd Skynyrd, and was in Brother Kane and played with Alice Cooper. And I always said, look, you know, that band was Sweet Home Alabama meets Hotel California. If we came out in the 70s, we'd been a rock band. But it was just where we, in 2007 and 2008, that's where we could get on the radio. And but anyway, you know, I like it all, you know, and it's you know, Matthew Sweet was an indie rocker, you know, and that was fun to do. and Tal Bachman was, you know, kind of a pop rock thing. And I don't know, I hate to put it in those small terms, but because it's a bit different. It's we all put things in boxes, but right. To me, it's,
you'll notice I didn't ask you about genres at all tonight.
No, I noticed that. Thank you.
I do want to take another quick break, and then I have maybe two more questions for you, if that's cool.
That's cool, man. I'm here.
Okay. So we're going to listen to Medusa's Disco, Blood and Honey, and we will be right back. Okay, Buck. So I hear all the time from local musicians that they don't care if they're playing to two people or 200 people. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling that you've played to way more than 200 people.
It's way more fun to play in front of 200 people than two people. Let's be real. Let's be honest. I've played my fair share of clubs back in the day with my own music or other bands where it was empty. That's no fun. That's being real, man. That's no fun. Yeah. I mean, we all want to get a chance to play. Now I would say when I've played like the Bluebird Cafe in Nashville, Tennessee, now it's a room of about 100 people, but they're all sitting down with food and cocktails and they're right here. They're sitting like as close as this keyboard is to me. You know, and it's just me and acoustic guitar, and I'm playing songs that I've written, and it's three other writers. And by the way, probably two of those writers have written major hit songs that everybody knows. And anyway, that's intimidating. And that's like, it's a different thing because no one's talking. They're listening. You know, that's the thing about Nashville. They really listen for the song to every lyric. They're hanging on every word. That's tough, man. but it's also very rewarding. So it's different. But yeah, look, the rush you get when you walk on stage and it's I'm with Aerosmith or the Vampires and it's 100,000 people at this huge rock festival in Europe or in South America and they're screaming at the top of their head. That's like a roar you can't, I can't imagine. You know, that's that, that you can't imagine that I've been experienced, fortunate enough to experience a few times. I don't know. I tried to, over the last summer, I had these sunglasses that would record video and audio, and I would walk on stage at these festivals just to give my fans on Instagram and friends a chance to see, this is what it feels like. You know, I'm off stage, there's Johnny, and we're about to walk on stage, and I'm going up to my riser to the keyboards, and look at that. You know, how cool is that? You know, I mean, that's fun, but I mean, honestly, yes, if I'm playing in a club and it's a couple hundred people instead of 100,000 and they're into it, man, that's killer too. That's fun. You know, it's, I think anytime you're around people and they're really into you and listening, not so much about me, but the music, you know, they're there for the same reason you are there to play it. You know, we're all there to enjoy it. And if they're feeling it, man, if it's, I guess if you're in a room and it's me and you and one other person and you guys are enjoying it, I'm enjoying it too, you know? And if it's 200,000 or whatever, but they're a football field away, I'm enjoying it. It's just a different type of thing. So
right. I don't
know if that answers your question.
it does. And I had a thought when you were talking about doing the singer-songwriter shows in Nashville.
Yeah.
I have a friend who was a guitar player in one of the first bands I ever designed a website for, who now lives in Nashville and is a singer-songwriter.
Yeah.
And he is also a elementary school teacher teaching music in Nashville.
Yeah.
And now I have to wonder if you guys have ever been at the same place at the same time. And I'm sure you would have no idea. So I'm not even, I'll throw his name out just so he can say I was talked about. His name is Jared Grease.
Jared Grease. Yeah. Don't think I've had the pleasure. Yeah.
That's like asking someone, hey, did you graduate with so and so? But
well, hey, listen,
now he can say that he was talked about while you were on the air.
I can in my neighborhood, I can throw a rock in any direction and hit a great musician in this town. There's a lot of great talent here. And you know, and that's great that he's doing that. He's writing songs but also teaching kids, and that's a beautiful thing. I love that.
So here's the last question I have for you.
And all right.
It's going to be one of mine, not a normal radio type one. All right. So you're standing at the crossroads that Robert Johnson once stood at and sold his soul to the devil to become a great guitar player. Why are you standing at this crossroads? And if you don't like the way it's worded, what's something that you haven't gotten to do that you would like to do?
Well, I would say the reason I'm probably standing there because I have a terrible sense of direction. And, you know, I'm like, who do I ask for directions? I'm afraid I can figure this out. You know, I don't know, man. I feel like I've been pretty lucky. I hit the jackpot that I got to choose what I love to do and make a living at it. Most people on this planet don't. And so that's success. Now, it doesn't mean it was easy. It still isn't easy. You know, it's a struggle, you know, and not to sound all, you know, it's tough. But getting here, you know, for many years, you know, it was a lot of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and ramen noodles for many years. And, you know, but we stuck to it, and perseverance is a big part of that. And so if I had to ask the devil, make a deal with the devil, I would say, I don't know, man. I think I'm good. You know, I don't need you. I'll find my own way.
Nice. I liked the I think I might be lost part.
That's true. I mean, I'll get lost in a mall. I'm like, okay, I was just here. Now, how do I get? No.
Right, so I lied. I'm going to ask you one more question.
No, you're good, man.
Over the years, and this one could possibly get you in trouble, who would you say has been your biggest supporter as a musician?
As far as somebody I worked with?
Anybody.
Well, I guess it has to go back to my wife and my family. I mean, I know that's kind of a dull answer, but it's the truth, you know. Like, I wouldn't be here where I am without them, you know, and the, like, again, the encouragement, you know. I mean, I know a lot of people that never got out the front door because they were never encouraged, and that took a lot of strength for those who didn't get that to break through that and say, no, I can do this. So I was lucky. I had that. And I had a wife that believed in me and knew I could do this. You know, maybe it was both of us being a little naive in the early days, but I think you got to have that, you know, that sense of we're in Los Angeles, we're doing it, you know, we're going to make it, you know. And it took way longer than you even could possibly imagine, but that's okay. You know, it's part of the, you got to enjoy their journey. In getting there, you know, that's part of it, enjoying the ride. So, yeah, I think my parents and my wife, and as far as any collaborators, I had one guy I should mention, Charlie Midnight, who's been my longtime songwriting collaborator for over 20 years. We've written, I don't know, 200 or 300 songs together. I lost count. And Charlie's, he's one of the great songwriting, I don't know, wordsmith in the world. He wrote Living in America for James Brown. He wrote a song that Joni Mitchell recorded because she liked his lyric. And he wrote and produced Joe Cocker and the Doobie Brothers and Hilary Duff. That's pretty diverse, you know. Yes. But he's a genius. And so he's always been an advocate of mine and a supporter and a believer. And all the people he works with, you know, and he knows. I mean, that meant a lot to me. It's like, oh, yeah, okay, I'm in good company here. And this guy really wants to continue to work with me. So, and, you know, we've still write to this day.
Very cool. Hey, I want to thank you for hanging out with me for the last about half hour or so.
Yeah, Bill, I loved it, man. This is awesome.
Thank you. For those of you that are watching or listening, you want to go to buckjohnson.com. Check out that single, Just Feel Better, and read the bio, look at all the credentials, and try not to fangirl like I was before I came on earlier.
Stop it. Hey, just, you know, got some good merch there, but you know, find me on Instagram too, Buck Johnson Official. I love to, if that's okay to mention, I like to, you know, meet fans and correspond there. I put a lot of my new stuff there, any kind of, you know, the content that's coming out. I got another single coming out April 5th, and it's more of a rocker. So I think it's more of an up-tempo rocker that people will be, you know, I think will enjoy. But there's going to be more singles coming throughout the year, and the album will drop in September 13th. So we're going to keep the singles coming and then the record in September.
So I need to keep on Danielle and tell her to keep me
surprised
on what's going on.
Absolutely.
What we're going to do now is I'm going to go ahead and let Buck go off into the evening. And for those of you that are watching for the first time, possibly in about 20 minutes, if you go to musicfrom412.com/radio or buildascene.com/radio, or if you want to listen through Scotland, you can go to xrpradio.co.uk. Any of those three radio stations will be replaying this with the music playing. And I do have two more tracks to play in this episode. They are Dream the Heavy, There You Go, and Travolta, Brother. And this has been episode number 715 of the Pennsylvania Rock Show. Thanks for hanging out with us tonight.
If you turn and look at me, I do. And if you turn and look at me, I tell ya.
Shake all your babies and friend.